Eclectic.
Welcome to Eclectic, the podcast about anything and everything youth ministry. I am not Scott Davis.
And I am not Bob Brown.
I hope that didn't confuse anybody.
Me too.
Hey, so guess what I did last night?
What did you do last night?
So today is a day off for me.
Right. And
so
me too.
Awesome. That works out great for a recording schedule.
Yes.
I mean, I knew I was coming down to record. And as you know, I'm an insomniac, so I only get about 3 or 4 hours of sleep at night. So I stayed up pretty late playing some video games. And there's a couple of video games on the Xbox that I downloaded. And there was one that I started playing, and the graphics are old-timey. And the icon for saving is actually like a 3.5-inch disc, like a floppy disc.
Nice.
And so I was like, you know, a lot of kids that are playing this game right now probably have no idea what that is. They're like, what is that weird square-looking thing?
That's not even all that old to me.
No, but... find a PC now that has a floppy drive.
Oh, you can't.
You cannot. You can hardly get them with DVD drives
I've
on them anymore.
I lost a lot of great youth ministry files that I had stored on what I thought was going to be long-term storage.
Floppy will never go out. Yeah. I mean, who can't use 3.4 megabytes?
I used to have some stuff stored on the old, what was it, five and a quarter?
The 5.25-inch.
5.25
yeah.
Discs, yeah.
512 kilobytes of data.
Yes.
Yeah, buddy. Well, you know, I love the kind of the retro thing. It's like coming back home, and it started making me think back to my Atari days.
Atari 2600.
Yes. Did you ever play the game Pitfall on Atari?
I love Pitfall.
So I was good. I didn't have the Atari. I actually had a Commodore 64, but it played all the Atari games, which was awesome.
Nice.
The cartridge was the same. So I love Pitfall. Pitfall was a lot of fun because back then I was also getting into Indiana Jones, and he was such a stud.
Yeah.
And so when I played Pitfall, I felt like I was Indiana Jones.
Yeah, I felt the same way. It was awesome.
Dude, who wouldn't want to like swing over a pit of alligators or, you know...
yeah.
Lava.
You know, the thing I love is, so today you got Minecraft, and it is so old-timey pixelized. It's this old-timey pixelized world.
But it is three-dimensional, so it adds a slightly different dimension.
Yeah, but I asked my kids, seriously, the graphics are horrible. It's like, it's intentionally old and bad, and they're like, oh,
but I gotta admit,
awesome.
I love playing Minecraft with my kids. It's a lot of fun. Now, I'm into strategic stuff. Okay,
yeah.
I'm a strategic thinker, and so I love strategic games like Risk. I kick butt at Risk,
and I
don't apologize for it.
Stuff.
Kids, take that. Stop crying about it. Okay, so actually, I shouldn't say that because Trey Pink cried the last time we played Risk.
Hey, it's how they learn and grow.
It is a tough love, but I love like strategizing and saying, okay, how am I going to survive in this Minecraft game. My kids just go out and just start having fun, and then nightfall comes, they don't have shelter. And I'm like, no, you can't come into my house. It's
like the three little pigs.
I am. I'm like, I thought ahead, you know? But the game like Pitfall, it's a runner. It's a classic runner, side-scrolling. You just go as fast as you can, and you avoid the pitfalls.
Alligators, jump the scorpions, all of
this
stuff.
Yes, all of the pitfalls that can come along. And Scott, you came across an article recently by Christopher Wesley. And I don't know anything about him, except for his name is at the end of this blog. And why did you think this article was a good one for us to talk about on this podcast?
Yeah, so the article is by Christopher Wesley, and I found it on, I believe it was a blog with Download Youth Ministry.
Okay.
It's called The 5 Pitfalls to your Youth Ministry Success. And I just thought it was...
Pitfalls. That's what made me think of the game.
Yes.
Pitfalls. Okay.
I thought it was really good information, and I think it's important for us, because we can be doing ministry and think things are going fine, but kind of be oblivious to some subtle things that can creep in that long-term can cause plateau and even decline in our ministry.
Yeah.
And then we look at things and we're like... how in the world did this happen? You know.
So it kind of is like the game Pitfall. You're running along, and you think you can jump over something, but you can't quite jump that far. By the time you realize that, it's too late.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so how easily things creep in, and you know, we can look at things and say, well, you know, we haven't done anything different for a long time. Well, it's because some of these things eat away at the foundation slowly.
Yeah.
And so I just thought it was really, really interesting and worth taking a quick look at.
Okay, sounds good, man. Let's jump in.
Yeah. So, like, the first one he talks about is the first pitfall is negative outlooks. He talks about you need to be able to analyze and critique your ministry, but it should be done in a constructive way. Be aware of negative people who constantly criticize without offering a solution.
Yes.
Talk about others when they're out around, and shut down ideas before they're fully developed. It reminds me of people who like to turn in a communication card to the offering without signing their name.
Yeah.
It's like, and so many churches have a policy, well, if those come in and they're not signed, we throw them away.
Yeah.
Yeah, you throw them away after you read them, and you still follow through with that. Most churches, they still let them impact them. But anyway, the negative outlook, and their negativity can be one of those things that creeps in and you don't necessarily realize it. One of the things he does is he lists a few things to help get rid of negativity, encouraging others, confronting the negativity immediately. But sometimes it's one of those things you don't realize has crept in, because sometimes it can be in the attitude that you have toward each other. And you can create a spirit of sarcasm and victimizing other people, sort of bully-ish kind of mentalities that can creep in, and everybody laughs at it, and you think it's fun and funny, but you don't realize how it's really coming across to other people, and that can really degrade atmosphere.
Yeah, it's so true. It's not like you're going to just wake up one day and, your ministry is just falling apart, and everybody is just negative. You allow it to creep in slowly. It's kind of like, and I hate this analogy, but it's true, the frog in a pot deal. Where if you put a frog and you drop him into hot water in a pot, he's going to jump out immediately. But if you put a frog into cool water and you slowly raise the temperature, he'll stay in there until he's boiled to death.
Right.
And so, I mean, and I don't know if that's scientifically true, but like, just I like the idea of it. Like, when you're startled by it, if somebody just comes out of you out of the blue and is like, dude, this ministry sucks, you can deal with that. You're like, whoa, man, why all of a sudden all the negativity? But when it's subtle and it's coming in a little bit at a time, and as leaders, we need to cut it off at the bat. It doesn't mean you shame somebody in front of everybody else. Hey, Scott, stop being so negative, man. That's lame. Pull somebody aside and lovingly confront them.
And you can talk to your leaders, your adult leaders and volunteers, and say, hey, if you witness this, kind of jump in and help kind of correct it. You're not in necessarily a confrontational way, but say, just try and be somebody who looks on the positive side to counter the negativity. You can work with your student leaders and do the same thing, and be a part of these conversations. When somebody comes with this negative thing and say, I don't know, I thought it was really cool, or I think whatever, and just kind of throw in a positive voice. But sometimes it comes quick and abruptly, and somebody says, oh, I hate it when we do this, or you notice in your high schoolers that sometimes when you talk about an event that's going to merge the high school group and the middle school group together for an event or something like that, that there's a little bit of, not necessarily all the group, but some of the group will be, you hear some of that, you got to address it. And maybe not in a we need to not be so negative, but, maybe you need to insert in your plans a series that talks about the value and beauty of community, and we're here together.
Absolutely.
And that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so you just remind me of something that just happened this summer. I've got some high schoolers that whenever we're doing stuff with the middle schoolers, they're like, the middle schoolers, they play like stupid games. They're like babies, right? And so if they're a junior or a senior and then they're thinking about hanging out with a sixth grader, they're like, oh my gosh, they're so young. But what's funny is our middle school and our high school camps are the same format, right?
Right.
We played the same games and did the same activities. And what's funny is I had some high schoolers that at high school camp were way more into these same childish games that we played at middle school camp, that if we would have said, hey, we're going to do a camp with the middle schoolers, we're going to play these games, they would have said, oh, those games are so childish. That's dumb. I don't want to do that. But they had a blast.
Yeah. Well, one year at camp, years ago when I was running all the games, programming set of camps, I'd been doing both camps, junior high and high school camp, back to back for like 9 or 10 years.
Yeah.
And this one year in particular, I'm kind of like, I feel like I'm out of ideas. And a friend of mine said, we'll just do stupid kid games. And he was kind of joking, but I'm like, okay. So at the senior high camp, at the high school camp, we one of the afternoons was just stupid kid games. And so we played, there were 300 campers, or 300 plus campers, and we sat around in this ginormous circle and played Duck, Duck, Goose.
That is awesome.
And we had multiple taggers tagging multiple people, getting chased, and we had people going in different directions, and it was a blast.
Yeah.
And there was actually moans and groans when we got done. There was some moans and groans when we started, but as we got it going, there were moans and groans when we had to end it. And so you can do stupid things.
Yeah.
And dumb things intentionally, but make it intentionally. Like, that's the catch.
Yeah, absolutely.
And have fun with it.
Absolutely. Negative outlooks can be a huge pitfall to your youth ministry success.
Yeah.
The next one that he talks about is misaligned expectations. He talks about how your vision for ministry needs to include everybody, and they need to be on the same page as you. And he says here, and I quote, "Never grow tired of explaining why you do what you do." We talked a little bit about this in our last week's podcast. When it comes to evaluating your ministry. And so if you've evaluated your ministry and you know why you're doing it, don't be afraid to explain it again and again, and make sure every leader can say without a doubt, this is why we do it.
Yeah. Some of the person behind it, by having a mission statement, by having a ministry plan, you know, like, this is who we are, this is what we exist to do, and these are some of the supporting things behind, you know, that help live this out. We accomplish it in these ways, and these are how we try to measure these situations. And so if you're clear on these things and communicating these things, not just once but regularly, but consistent with it. Then it helps bring everybody in.
One of the things that I would love, and we're working towards that in our ministry, is everybody that's in the ministry is a recruiter for the ministry. And so if you're one of my youth leaders, Scott, if somebody comes to you and a friend says, "Hey, Scott, you volunteer in youth ministry, tell me a little bit about it. What's it like? I'm considering volunteering." Well, your average leader goes, "Oh, man, it's a blast. Talk to the youth pastor."
Right.
But I'd rather you sit down and say, "Well, Rob, since you're a good and trusted friend of mine, let me tell you, this is why we do what we do. And you should be able to explain the vision to that person." And so by the time that person comes to me, it shouldn't be, "Hey, I have questions about your ministry." It should be, "Scott has answered all my questions about ministry. I want to sign up. How do I sign up?"
Right.
And then I sit down with them and say, "Okay, tell me a little bit about yourself and your ministry experience, and why do you want to sign up?" And, you know, it goes a long way for you because you already have a trusted relationship with them. When they hear from you, "Hey, this is what we're all about," it means a little something different, a little more oomph behind it than if they come to me and I don't know them and they say, "Hey, what's your ministry about?" Well, of course you're going to talk it up because you're getting paid to do that. But when a volunteer says, "Hey, man, this is what we're about and it's awesome,"
right,
people will take it a little more seriously.
Yeah. The next one he brings up is the idea that busyness is boss.
And oh,
That's a myth that we can get into, but busyness can boss us around. That there's this constant pressure that can be on us, or this perceived pressure to do more.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people out there who feel like a busy youth ministry. You got to keep the kids active, got to keep them going, got to keep them moving. You know what? The world is busy enough. Sometimes you need to create space for them to slow down.
Yes.
Sometimes the worst thing we can do is make sure that there's another activity. It's not the end of the world if you have a month where you don't have a major event. And you know, one of the things I've learned over the years is to kind of slow down and allow the youth ministry to have breathing room.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the points that he makes here on how to combat that is surrounding yourself with people who can give you margin. I can't tell you how huge that is.
Right.
One of the things that I see youth ministers in particular needing to be able to do is learn how to delegate. And when you do delegate, just let it go. For the love of Pete, just let it go, people.
Pete needs that love.
Yes, yes. Are we talking about Peter the disciple?
I have no idea.
My wife has an uncle named Pete.
I think it's the same guy that we do things in his
sake. Yeah, for Pete's sake.
Yeah.
For Pete's sake, let it go.
For his sake and for the love of him.
For the love of Pete and for Pete's sake. Yeah, absolutely. So there's some Sundays where if we don't stop ourselves, like, that stupid analogy will just go on forever and ever. Oh, there's a squirrel?
Yeah, what?
Okay, so sorry about that, folks. But the bottom line is this. I've got some people in my ministry that I trust, and when I'm coming back from camp on a Friday and that Sunday, we got Sunday school, I'll ahead of time say, "Hey, who wants to teach this Sunday?" Or I'll ask someone in particular, "Hey, can you take this Sunday? Or can you take this Wednesday and just be the guy because I know I'm going to be just coming back from a trip and it's going to be crazy and hectic. And rather than put that one more thing on myself and say, well, you know, I can come back on a Tuesday from a trip and then teach on Wednesday and then, you know, do that weekend trip Thursday, Friday, Saturday, get back Saturday night, teach on Sunday again. No, you need that breathing room. Otherwise, you're going to burn out.
Right. Absolutely. For you, for your leaders, for your kids, for your parents, for people's finances, you've got to pace.
Yeah.
You got to have a pace.
Yeah. And I find that part of the reason why some youth leaders do this leads right into his next point, and it's the Lone Ranger mentality.
Right.
The Lone Ranger mentality is a huge pitfall, especially with very capable people. You find younger, capable youth workers just trying to do it all by themselves.
Right.
And there's several reasons for that. One is you don't have anybody that you can trust. You're too controlling and not willing to let it go. You're afraid it's not going to be done to your standard. But the bottom line is this. Even if somebody's not as good a teacher as you, allowing them to teach is going to make them better at it, and it's going to give you that breathing space that you so desperately need. The ministry, all ministry is community. And if you don't have a community of people surrounding you in that ministry that can invest into these teams with you, then you're going to get to a point where you find yourself in big trouble. And I know you've got a great book here that speaks to that.
Yeah, it's called No More Lone Rangers.
Yeah.
It's by David Chow. The foreword is actually by Doug Fields. It's an older book. I mean, it doesn't feel old to me because it's only 14 years old.
Because you're an older youth pastor.
I'm an older youth pastor, so that's half my ministry.
It's only as old as your teens.
Yeah, so, wow.
Kendall was born when that book came out.
Yeah, my daughter just turned 14 recently. Wow, yeah. Okay. Anyway, so it's older than I realized, but it's still some good stuff.
It's timeless.
How to build a team-centered youth ministry. There's vision and direction for team-led ministry, keys for developing a quality ministry team, a lot of practical ideas, and a lot of direction for moving forward. It's an older book, but it's still really good and got a lot of valid points.
Yeah, Christopher, the writer of this blog, makes a really good point. He says, when a leader tries to do it on his or her own, it limits growth. When growth is limited, the ministry will not only plateau, but eventually deteriorate. Stop trying to do everything on your own, and you'll create a healthier and stronger ministry.
Yeah.
Couldn't have said it better. That's why I read it.
Yeah, find ways to pass things on.
Yes,
so,
yes.
Yeah. So, and that, honestly, that kind of segues into his last point that he makes, the fifth pitfall, self-serving leadership. And to me, this kind of easily gets into the realm of what you can label as spiritual abuse. There's a great book called The Subtle Power of Spiritual Abuse by David Johnson and Jeff Van Vonderen. Yes.
Sounds Dutch.
It does. But it's recognizing and escaping spiritual manipulation and false spiritual authority within the church. And in a chapter that talks about how to identify an abusive system, one of the points is power posturing. And it speaks to leadership. And one of the things it says is, a quick quote, they spend a lot of energy posturing about how much authority they have and how much everyone else is supposed to submit to it. The fact that they're eager to place people under them, under their word, under their authority, is one easy to spot clue that they're operating in their own authority. He's speaking about operating in your own authority as opposed to the authority of God. And a lot of times, sometimes, not all the time, sometimes the Lone Ranger mentality itself can come out of this, well, you know, I'm the authority. And so it's my word, and I need to jump in. And there are times where we just need to have the last word on things, and we just need to go with the vision that God has set us, and we need to make decisions saying, no, this is the direction we're going.
Yeah.
But that's only sometimes, because it really is all of us together. It's not about you and what you create. It's about what God wants to do here, and how are you going to partner in with God?
Yeah, absolutely. There's several ways that people can lead, and one of them is by position or titular leadership, where you say, look, the nameplate on my door says youth pastor, you're a youth worker, so essentially when you lead by position, you're essentially saying, just shut up and do what I tell you to do because I told you to do it. Respect has to be earned, you know. The day and age of just respecting somebody because of their position is long gone. You know, in other cultures, like, from my mom's side of the family, just being a pastor or a doctor or a lawyer, there's a certain amount of respect that comes with that, right?
Right.
And so they'll always call you by your title. You're no longer Mr. Davis. You are Pastor Davis, right? It's a sign of respect. Those days in Western culture are pretty much gone. I mean, right. It's hard to find that. And so as a leader, you need to earn that respect. You need to. And I find that all of these pitfalls, if you notice, it comes down to leadership. The negativity, if as a leader, you're not calling out the negativity, the gossip, et cetera, doing something to stop it. If you are yourself being negative and critical without offering solutions, people are going to follow suit. The expectations, you have to be very clear about what your ministry is about and what, you know, you want your staff to be about. Creating those margins for yourself, allowing other people to step up so the busyness isn't an issue, and not being a lone ranger, and the whole self-serving leadership thing, it all comes down to us as the leader of the ministry and what are we willing to do. And you know, it's the biblical answer, right? It's the Bible answer, but we got to look to Christ and look at his example of servant leadership, because that's what we're really called to do. And I find that taking that humbling posture of how can I serve you?
Well, and Jesus, you know, who, you know, to quote Philippians, who being in the very nature of God did not consider equality with God something to grasp. So if God, if Jesus himself, who in his nature, 100% divine, as well as 100% human, if he and who he was in reality and totality did not step up and say, well, I'm Jesus, so you have to do everything that I say, and I'm in charge, and la, 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 la. Yeah. Instead, he became a servant.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. For the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and gave up his life as a ransom for many. That paints such a beautiful picture of what we're supposed to be emulating. Because, I mean, let's face it, when we look at youth ministry, and people make this argument sometimes, well, youth ministry is not even biblical. Well, you know what? Neither is senior pastoring a church. Church leadership paid positions aren't necessarily biblical either. However, what we can do as we step into these positions is continually ask that question, what can I do to serve my leaders? And man, I tell you, that makes such a huge difference in how your people respond to you. If you are constantly looking out for their needs and taking care of your leaders, it builds trust and camaraderie and loyalty.
Right.
And it goes a long way. This Lone Ranger thing that we mentioned just a moment ago, I see that so much.
Yeah.
And even in veteran youth leaders, and it just makes me wonder, man, how do you survive? You must be very capable of what you do, really good at what you do, because you keep alienating people around you. And every time you show up to a youth event, you've got new leaders because the old ones have fallen away. And after a certain point, you got to realize and maybe stop and go, well, maybe it's me.
Yeah. The reality is, one of the things I've learned over the years is that a lot of times people that can be lone rangers and survive, they're young.
Yeah.
And what they're really surviving on is not necessarily a movement of God, but their own charisma. And when age begins to happen, speaking from experience, when age begins to happen and energy begins to wane even a little bit, surviving on charisma gets harder and harder and harder, because you don't have you have less and less time and energy to focus on that charismatic element. And so, yeah, it's a really dangerous game, and really it kind of centers, it either develops or it centers around the idea of pride. And, some people just haven't learned how to partner with other people, and so they don't know how to do it any other way.
Yeah.
And there needs to be some self-evaluation and looking at,
absolutely,
you know, what are my own personal shortcomings that I need to allow God to work through.
And letting your team know sincerely that they have permission to speak into your life in these areas and call you out. There's been a couple of times where I've gotten a phone call from a youth leader after an event or something. And, hey, man, I just wanted to just mention that, you know, when you said this, that could have been construed the wrong way. I sincerely hope you didn't mean it that way, Rob, but I just felt like I had to call you out on it just in case. You might want to give that person a call and make sure that they understood it the right way. And I go, oh my gosh, you're right. In retrospect, that could have been taken as critical and harsh and mean. I better give that person a call. And you know, in that particular, and this is something that actually happened. And so I called the person and said, hey man, I just wanted to apologize, because I said something earlier today during ministry, and it was pointed out to me that, man, it could have been taken this way. And so, and I apologize. I didn't make it a conditional apology. if you were offended, I apologize. No, yeah. I just flat out apologized and said, I should have been more careful with my words. Whether you were offended or not doesn't matter. It's the fact that I said something that could have offended you. And they're like, dude, you're absolutely cool. I knew what you meant by it. I know you well enough. And so I was thankful. But it gave me a moment to pause and go, okay, as I'm speaking to my leaders, I need to make sure I'm choosing my words carefully. And when you send an email, you got to make sure that I try to read all my emails in the most negative light possible and go, could this be taken the wrong way? You know, and occasionally I reword things and make points of clarification in parentheses, parenthetical statements. This was a joke.
Yes. You know? Yeah. You know, one of the just personal pet peeve, massive pet peeve. One of the biggest non-apologies in existence is, oh, I'm sorry if what I said hurt you.
Yeah.
No, you're not.
No.
Really not.
It did hurt me. So are you sorry now? Well, I just apologize. No, you made a conditional statement.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
Anyway.
Yeah. So yeah, that heart of humility, and I think if you're humble, that's probably the key to most of these pitfalls is honestly being humble, and asking yourself, what would Jesus do?
Yeah.
I hate to throw that out there, but
let's just not start the bracelet thing.
Hashtag
WWJD.
Well, he asks a question here at the end of his blog. What other pitfalls make their way into your ministry, and how do you combat them? And we pose the same question. If you've got some pitfalls that you find that you are combating, let us know. You can reach out to us on our website. That's eclectic.com, eklectic. Or you can email us, podcast@eclectic.com. Once again, that's eklectic. You can find us on Twitter. We are @eclectic. On Facebook, we're facebook.com/IamEclectic. And you can also listen to us on iTunes. You can like us there. Give us a positive rating. If you like what you've heard, if any of this is helpful, we would love it if you would comment on social media, like us, share us. That would really help us out. Thanks for listening. I'm Rob.
And I'm amazingly humble.
No, he's actually Scott. Stay eclectic.